Welcome to Coffee House Shots for Spectators Daily Politics Podcast. Is Boris Johnson close to a deal? Now, stranger things have happened. People in Westminster are saying there's about one in three chance of this having an elegant ending and him actually being given something by the European Union. There is talk of a compromise based in Northern Ireland, perhaps a sort of all-Ireland agriculture policy, but how likely is it to happen? Are the DUP's red lines moving? And in fact, now that the Conservatives don't have a majority at all, do the DUP matter? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Katie Bowles and James Forsyth to discuss. So, James, it's very difficult to tell what, if any, movement there has been on this, but we can talk, I guess we can talk about what we are hearing, what people we speak to are talking about, and they're talking about some movement on Ireland and some concessions on an all-Ireland food and agriculture policy.
So, let's look at first piece of evidence. The Arlene Foster statement released after her and Geoffrey Dawson and Nigel Dawson meeting with Boris Johnson said that the DUP would not accept a tariff border in the RSC. Now, the significance of that is that it's saying essentially it would not accept a customs border, but it leaves open the possibility of some kind of regulatory border in the RSC. Now, let's look at what that could be. At the moment, there are only restrictions on linkage between Northern Ireland and Great Britain is some stuff on agriculture in the case of, for example, a foot and mouth outbreak. Mm-hmm. I think the DUP in private have always been relatively open to the idea of building on those existing checks that do exist in times of emergency to basically try and maintain an all-Ireland agricultural economy. People often say that only 30% by value of the trade that goes across the border is agriculture. So it doesn't solve everything. But agriculture is by 75% by volume. So it would that would definitely get you quite a long way to a solution. I think the other thing the DUP have always said is that there's got to be a role for Northern Ireland's institutions in deciding this. Now, one of the problems with that position has always been twofold. One, the EU is very reluctant to treat with an entity within a state. It wants to deal with the UK, not with the Northern Irish Assembly. And the other obvious problem is there is no Northern Irish Assembly up and running at the moment. It has been in abeyance for several years. So you would need to make some progress on getting Stormont up and running for that to become viable. But that is always the kind of landing zone that you would be looking at. But then that leaves you the question of what do you do about goods. But I think goods is easier to deal with because under EU law, the checks that need to be done at the border itself are all agricultural. All the other stuff is easier to deal with because it can be done away from the border.
Right. So, Katie, Arlene Foster isn't standing at the next general election. Nigel Dodds is generally in the driving seat. Are there signs that the DUP are getting a bit worried now that they're losing their influence over the government and trying to work out if the collapse of the government's majority and therefore the collapse of the effective Tory DUP coalition has changed the equation here anyway?
Well, I think you've seen DUP sources playing down the idea that they no longer have, you know, sway with Boris Johnson. I think the fact that Boris Johnson is holding meetings with them suggests that clearly this is a Conservative government that wants to keep channels open. Now, Boris Johnson is going to present a Queen's speech in a few weeks' time. I don't think anyone believes that this parliament is one that's going to last particularly long. But if he is to have any chance of passing it, and I think few believe he will need DUP votes. I think when it comes to perhaps why the DUP, and we saw this last night with Geoffrey Donaldson talking at perhaps the prospect of a deal, a keen to look to a deal, is if you think about how the DUP might fare in an early election, it's not particularly rosy picture. Of the people who might lose their seats, Nigel Dodds is one person who's tipped to potentially lose his seat in an early election. I think it would help the DUP going into an election had a Brexit deal been agreed, one they could sell to their constituents, one they could say was a good deal for Northern Ireland and stuck to their unionist values. But I think that could be a factor here because going into an election with Brexit unresolved, talking about no deal, I think there is an acceptance that we'll lose the DUP seats, not gain them, and perhaps not even hold what they currently have.
But James, let's say for the sake of argument that the DUP were prepared to compromise, a deal was in prospect. Why would the EU give the Tories a deal. Wouldn't it suit them just to keep them stuck in this vice, let the agony be protracted, and just keep on with their general theme of letting Britain serve as a warning to anybody who wants to leave the EU club?
Look, there's less chance of a deal in a way now, because there's no chance of the UK saying we're going to walk away.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think the EU has any great desire for Brexit to run over into the term of the next commission, which starts on November 1st. I also think that there are some in the EU who don't think the prospect of the UK staying in, having once voted to leave, would be actually a good thing for the EU. But the UK would become such a difficult and unpredictable member, it would be easier for the UK just to leave. But I think your point is right, which is the EU are not going to compromise unless they think that this deal could get through Parliament. But I also think Katie makes an absolutely crucial point, which is the DUP are not a no-deal party. You know, Sammy Wilson might sound quite bullish about no-deal, but most of the DUP are very worried about what no-deal would mean for them in the short term electorally, and what in the medium to longer term it would mean for, you know, Catholic middle-class consent for the union. So I do think the DUP... I don't think the DUP are going to accept something which basically hives Northern Ireland out of the UK's customs territory or creates barriers to trade between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. But I think they might be more open to compromise in some other areas.
And if you want to be an optimist on the chance of Boris Johnson getting a deal through this parliament, there's lots of reasons to think it's unlikely. But you have seen other movement this week. So you have this new group of MPs, MPs for a Deal, led by Stephen Kinnock. It's got people like Victoria Prentice from the Conservative Party in it. I understand when Victoria Prentice put it on the Tory MP WhatsApp group, she didn't get many positive replies back about it. I think it was down to two replies. But there is this sense that there are these MPs like Caroline Flint who want to show that they are here to vote for a deal and they are quite open to any deal. I still think the mathematics is difficult because you might be able to get, say, 20 Labour MPs. I've heard some people say they think you get 40 Labour MPs, but I've also seen people raise eyebrows at that, particularly when you see Jeremy Corbyn trying to keep this ambiguity up. But what about the Conservative Party? And I think what I find difficult to imagine, and perhaps if Boris Johnson wants to pass a Brexit deal for change to the backstop, he will be able to sell it to all the Brexiteers in his party. But I think many of them look at Nigel Farage and they'd be quite worried about passing a deal with small changes, even if they are sellable to the DUP, which they think would allow Nigel Farage to spend an election, which is not too far away, saying they let you down.
And James, what are we to make of the talk that Boris Johnson's commissioned plans for a bridge from Scotland to Northern Ireland as a sign of commitment of his union?
Well, I think the funny thing about the bridge is it does two contradictory things. In one way, it makes the problem more difficult because at the moment, Northern Ireland to GB requires a ferry crossing. A ferry crossing creates time. It provides a discrete place where you could do some stuff, right. All this stuff. A bridge would cause problems, but a bridge would also be a restatement of Northern Ireland's role or proximity into the UK, so it could sweeten the pill of accepting some other concessions. Now, Katie has been optimistic. I'm going to win the Dr. Pangloss Prize by making two even more optimistic points. One is, I think the appointment of Phil Hogan, or the nomination, I should say, of Phil Hogan as the EU's Trade Commissioner actually does open up some political space. Because if an Irishman is going to be the trade commissioner, the person negotiating the post-Brexit trade deal with the UK, I think it is more politically viable for Varadkar to push some issues into that negotiation. It is easier for him to say, don't worry, we're not going to get done over in this negotiation because it's been done by Phil Hogan, who is an Irishman, right? So he is going to look after our interests. So that's one thing. The second thing is, Nigel Farage's position has evolved a little bit, I think. One, he has been more emollient to the Tories than I would expect. Secondly, he himself is now proposing a two-year standstill, which is in essence a transition, which is the big thing of the withdrawal agreement, essentially, which is an interesting development. I also think that if Boris Johnson came back from that EU council with a deal, this would be very, very different from the moment when Theresa May came back with her deal. I think it is fair to say that no one rang the church bells when Theresa May came back with her deal. I mean, if Boris Johnson came back with a deal, if he'd managed to get the EU to reopen the withdrawal agreement, if he had managed to get the EU to make some concessions...
and get rid of the backstop, that's his test.
And then I think the reaction to it would be very different. And I think this national desire for this to be over would be very strong. And that would act as a countervailing pressure on Tory MPs. I think the patience of even Tory activists who are very Eurosceptic, for MPs who want to stand up and say, oh, I don't think this deal is quite perfect, would be relatively low. I think there would just be a desire to get this done.
But Katie, we all know that it ain't over till it's over. I mean,
I know, I'm not.
The desire, even if he comes back with this, there'll be this parliament, there's a lot of them who just want to see Boris Johnson in agony. They don't want him to have an elegant solution and to waltz off into the sunset. So do you think that even if they do manage to do everything that James says, this parliament would say, OK, we're going to grant it to you, it's now over?
I remain sceptical, but that might be the consequence of doing this daily and these days twice daily podcast over about 2 years of Theresa May trying to pass a deal with this parliament. And I also do think there is a thing here, which is Labour MPs say they want to vote for a deal. Many of them say they have regret. They wish they'd done it the third time Theresa May put that deal through. Now, the reason they didn't was they didn't believe it was close. But do we genuinely believe there is a sizable chunk who are willing to put their career on out on a lifeline in a dangerous point to vote for a deal led by Boris Johnson? There are some who think Boris Johnson is actually a more divisive figure than Theresa May and harder to support in Parliament to help him in an election. So I do think party lines might come back to haunt on this issue. And I suppose she could find some encouragement in the sense that Jeremy Corbyn seems to want to maintain this Brexit ambiguity, so they're not moving to be a completely pro-Remain party, at least yet. But I still think that Jeremy Corbyn and his team might try and stop people from allowing a Brexit deal would make it easier for the Tories in a general election. So it's difficult to see, but strange things have happened in the past 3 years.
And we also haven't discussed, though, the negative development yesterday is what Angela Merkel said about Singapore on Thames. You know, there is. I think she has a real concern, which I don't think she is alone in feeling, that Boris Johnson's desire to go for what he calls a kind of simpler free trade agreement, while on the one hand, some in the EU like the fact that he's not trying to negotiate this kind of half in, half out relationship that Theresa May was aiming for. But they also worry that this is a signal that this is that the UK is basically going to indulge in what they view as a kind of regulatory race to the bottom. And the view is you can sign a free trade deal with Canada because it's a relatively small economy that is on the other side of the Atlantic. The UK is a much larger economy that is 26 miles away. And the view is you having a kind of unconstrained UK economy on its doorstep is not in the EU's interest. So hang on.
If only unconstrained economy. Oh, I mean, I love hearing these talk of these EU dystopian visions of Britain. There's a country of great competitiveness, low taxes, entrepreneurship.
I think that is a further complication, which is, you know, are they going to want to offer that Boris Johnson would not only need a change to the backstop, he would need a massively rewritten political declaration to reason everyone's got a bit quiet is that the editor is currently eating crumbs off his table in a anticipation of food shortages.
I'm on a very strict diet
lunchtime.
Right now.
It is low carbs too if it's crumbs. That's a tiny portion.
Right, but quite carb intense crumb. But anyway, I'm allowed 20 grams today.
I think there would be a wariness about signing up to a political declaration that essentially said the UK is going to sign this, you know, this free trade agreement, but it's not going to sign up to social and environmental standards, etc., 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 etc.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can sign up to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store or to the magazine itself on spectator.co.uk/voucher. That means for just £12, you can get a £20 Amazon voucher. Thanks to Cindy Yu for producing this, and thanks to Pritamanje for the quasins.